What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Here. And we are the only ones here, so let's get started. those who see this in the future. Yeah, we are a little bit late. I had some issues with the stream key, which got resolved. Welcome to Tales from the Forlorn Dopes. My name is Cyber Smiley, and I have a co-host by the name of...
I am Wisdom000, and I am happy to see you all.
And welcome, one and all, to our wonderful little podcast with our nice little small hardcore audience and our true fans. So this particular episode kind of marks the end of the year because we are going to take the rest of the month off. Not sure if we're going to broadcast on the 1st of January. I think we're still debating on whether we want to take a full month off and just hang out. But the coming year, we have a plan. We have things to talk about. We're actually going to be a little more structured in the future. However,
we're working it.
This episode is not going to be that. Yeah. This episode is definitely not going to be it.
Yeah, hopefully this will be the last episode of us doing nothing but rambling at each other and at you guys for the full hour plus.
Welcome, System Looms. Yeah. So I figured this episode we can kind of talk a little bit about, what we've done since the last episode and then kind of get into a little bit of what happened over the year. If there's any major events that happened over the year, don't know. I think there's a few. But
one or two.
Yeah, so let's get started. So from my point of view, I haven't done much or planned much for my site. I am starting to come up with a design / motivation to start working on a data fort designer because I love me my Netrunner, so I'll be able to create a data fort with drag and drop icons, and you can list out all the programs within it and put keys, etc., to create a old-fashioned Cyberpunk 2020 data fort, because I know I've already done that for Cyberpunk Red. Figured I should do it for 2020 as well.
You're a dedicated man.
Yeah. The reason why I got distracted is I've been playing around with, I think I mentioned it last episode, this online service called World Anvil. I started moving my Cyberpunk campaign documentation in there, so that way my players have a better resource and a way to access old notes from the previous games, and also see the various NPCs, because I know there's other virtual tabletops out there that I do use, like Roll20. However, they are not great for storing data. and storing documentation. Great for rolling dice, great for moving and plotting out characters on a map, but they are not great for sharing and distributing of campaign notes and data. So I'm really digging this new tool. So that's kind of it for me, at least on a cyberpunk role-playing table. What about you?
In the last year, I have gone through a couple of cyberpunk campaigns. Two of them started and ended prematurely, and hopefully I'll be able to pick them up someday again. And the third, you are now part of yourself there, Will, so hopefully that continues to flourish. You talked about the virtual tabletops and all that. I'm still trying to get a hold of Roll20. It is not the easiest interface. In fact, it is an interface that just causes me nothing but migraines. But like you said, it's good for moving stuff around a map. It's got a good dice roller, I guess. But it doesn't store documents well.
Yep.
And like I said, for me, it's mostly the interface. I just really, it's not intuitive. Things are not easily accessible and found. But it works. I mean, there are ways that I would improve it if I were running it, but I'm not. I don't have any kind of... I wouldn't know how to program, you know. I could barely program my VCR in the 80s. Now, I'm an old fart who does not get new tricks. That's why my website looks like it's from the 90s. Still. Yeah. On the website front, I mean, I'm fully entrenched in working on stuff. I've got an espionage source book that's... I keep talking about this stuff. It's trudging along ever so slowly. It's been a slow year as far as content for me.
But hopefully your juices are starting to flow, right? Because you started up your...
Oh, the juices are flowing. Like, I stay awake at night thinking about this stuff. I just trying to maneuver my back injury into a position where I can safely and... Or not safely, but comfortably type.
Yep.
Is, that's an all-day expenditure.
Yep. Yeah, because you started your... This, campaign this year, right, that I'm now in?
Oh yeah.
So
about 6 months ago, and then we did about 2 months worth of sessions before we took a hiatus because, well, half the players either moved, got new jobs, or went back to work after the pandemic, so everything kind of took a backseat. And now I've got, now it's rolling again. So we're thankful for that.
Yep. And that's always kind of the pitfalls of gaming, especially when you become an adult and have less and less free time. I remember as a kid, I probably gamed 4 to 5 days a week. If not, I was gaming, I was rolling up characters and reading and all that other stuff. So
honestly, I don't even have to go back that far. Like 10 years ago, before the heart problems kicked in, even when I was holding down a 40-hour-a-week job, I was still gaming 3 to 4 nights a week for, you know, anywhere between 4 and 10 hours at a time, depending on, like, if I actually had to work that day or not. Like on the weekends, Jesus, yeah, we'd go from like noon until, you know, when we couldn't stay awake any longer.
Nice. Yeah, my wife kind of limited me on how many days a week I can game, at least during the beginning of our marriage. But
I have never had the misfortune of having someone love me enough to tell me they want to spend time with me on a personal, romantic basis. There we go.
It wasn't so much.
That's not entirely true.
And again, it wasn't always romantic. It was more like, hey, I need you to do this. I need you to make me this.
You got to do chores.
Yes, the honeydew.
Yeah. Oh, so, man.
That's one thing you luckily you missed out on.
Same again.
Yep. So other news, I did watch a few Cyberpunk-related things since our last episode. I'm going to go through the ones that I know you didn't see, but at least we can talk about. So there was a movie that I came across. In the description, it said Cyberpunk Gang, and I was like, okay, let's watch this. And it is definitely a classic B-movie, made for TV, probably was made for TV and just didn't even make it to TV, that was on Netflix. It's called The Car, Road to Revenge, and it starred Grant Bowler, who, if you don't know his name, he is from Defiance. He was the main, the sheriff of the town. Also...
I really want to see that show continue.
I would have loved to have seen that show continue, but c'est la vie, you know. I doubt it. They're going to do a reboot anytime soon.
No, it's...
Even though Grant Bauer probably needs the money. If he's from this movie.
Maybe he's doing stuff like that. Yeah.
So basically the premise of the movie was a senator or congressman or some politician who's hard on crime and, you know, getting things done. He basically gets attacked and murdered, and all of a sudden his car becomes possessed by him, as well as the car already being an AI. So the car goes off on a revenge, a little bit like a Christine, the Wraith, and all those other corny car movies in which, you know, the car seeks vengeance. The reason why it was cyberpunk was there is one of the secondary characters has a cyber arm. There is a bit of cybernetics, kind of near future type of technology around it.
Awesome.
The acting is, again, B-movie, so don't expect much. So if you love corny, crappy movies, and...
I mean, the last episode we did was, like, mostly geared around us reviewing Nemesis. So
yes.
B-movies have never been an obstacle for anything for me.
Right. The other thing I saw was Elang, which... The Wolf Brigade, which was the live-action version of Jinro, the anime. If you haven't seen that anime, you definitely want to go see. Wisdom's going to say it's very boring.
Well, just Oshi himself is fairly boring. I love the concept of it. I loved the original manga that it was based off of. And I liked the live action. I liked Elang. I thought it was better than the anime, personally. It's a Korean remake. I've had more action, which is... I mean, honestly, here's what it comes down to. Jinro Wolf Brigade. The cover of it is a dude in full armor carrying a machine gun with red glowing eyes. If you look at that cover, you're all like, holy shit, this is going to be some ultra-violent, badass action. And then you watch it, and then it's like 2 hours of talking to like 30 seconds of action.
True.
And this is... That is the perfect description for just about all of Mamoru Oshii's movies.
Yeah, but then you get into... the sewer scene, which lasted
awesome.
A good amount of time.
And there's more action to Ilang, which I dug. Yeah, in Jinro, the characters were a little bit better thought out. They weren't quite so cliche as they were portrayed in Ilang. But I often wonder how much of that is lost in translation, because Ilang is, like I said, it's a Korean reproduction of a live action reproduction of a Japanese anime. So, who knows what we lose?
And like when I was watching that, I really got the sense of what Metal Gear is, like from Cyberpunk, right? So Metal Gear is armor that is worn by soldiers, by ultra secret police individuals.
I mean, it's heavy military style, like, technology. Yeah, you can get your hands on it, but you're not going to wear it on any kind of regular basis unless you're either in the shit or expecting to get in the shit in the very near future. Like, nobody just hangs out in Metal Gear.
Yeah, and I think that's what one problem, I think, with Cyberpunk 2020 was a lot of GMs allowed, okay, it only costs this much. There's no laws against wearing armor, right? And availability, there's no availability on armor.
Well, it's the classic problem that GMs have, new GMs to Cyberpunk have, in that they're mostly coming from, either they're coming completely whole cloth newbies to it, or they're coming from other role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons, where sure, you just wear your armor all the time or nobody cares.
And I think that's one thing that would have fixed things like that is similar to what FASA, who took over FASA? WizKids?
I don't know.
And then Catalyst Games, right? When they created, and I forget the edition of Shadowrun, and it kind of bled over into the MechWarrior RPG, was the concept of having all items have availability and legality rankings on all of it. And yeah, that adds a little more crunch to the game, but it also is a way in which a GM can control certain items and also dictate what kind of game they want to run. Do they want to run a team of special ops who get all the fun legal, you know, illegal stuff that the street people shouldn't be wearing? And if you're running a street, you know, a gutter punk game, you ain't gonna get certain things, right?
I mean, it's just like it's just like the arms race that everybody complains about. If you walk around in full Metal Gear, you're not going to get into the club. No one's going to let you in. When you're walking down the street, if you're not attracting every gang in the neighborhood, you're certainly attracting the police and corporate security, who are going to, you know, never take their eyes off of you. Like, what the fuck is that shady guy over there doing, and that he needs all that armor for? Just like if you go walking around armed to the teeth.
Yep.
Like, you're seen as paranoid and a nutbag, and nobody wants to work with you because you're looking for trouble.
And cops are going to start following you because...
Yeah, cops are going to start following you.
You're wearing that kind of armor. You're looking for trouble.
Yeah, getting into the gas station. You're walking around looking for trouble, and nobody wants trouble.
Yeah, I had recently, this was a couple of sessions back, the team of my players, right, were infiltrating a facility team as the cleaning staff, and basically they stopped at the guard gate. I said, okay, the guard's looking at you, looking at all your faces, and one of my players said, oh, I'm wearing my helmet. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, is that a problem? He's like, yeah, because the security guard's going to get on his freaking walkie-talkie and call you in and pull his gun out and start taking you guys in. He's like, oh.
Why is this guy wearing a helmet? Is he special?
Well, he's trying to, you know, not be seen, you know, have his face not be seen. And it's like, dude, you are currently posing as cleaning crew, and cleaning crews do not wear face masks. They do not wear helmets.
Cleaning crews don't wear helmets.
So it was a bit of an education to the player. So
yeah, I mean, all these problems that these GMs new to Cyberpunk complain about, they would mostly be handled with just the application of a little bit of common sense. Like, no, you can't run around like that all the time. Yeah. If you are actively planning a raid, sure, go healed. But otherwise, like 90% of the time, you shouldn't be walking around with anything more than like a handgun on you. And a small one at that, something that is easily concealable.
Yep, exactly. I did have one player who carried around a bow, but she actually went to a tech to kind of make it a kind of folding bow, similar to what, not necessarily all of what Hawkeye had, right? In which he just, you know, would just do a flick of his wrist and a full bow would appear, but she would, you know. It was definitely a little more concealable, right? In which she could break it down easily. And by the way, bows are freaking deadly in the game. Too deadly, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. I mean, armor piercing for full damage? That's dangerous.
So, yes, that's with a regular arrow. Well, with broadhead arrows, it's...
Oh, yeah, once you start adding broadhead and razors and...
Well, broadhead arrows were half armor, double damage. And then there was another one, and I forget the name of it. Safety? No, I don't think it's that. That does...
Well, I mean, plus you can add explosives to arrows.
Neurotoxins. Yeah.
That you just can't do with bullets to the same extent.
Yep.
And within their range, within the bow's range, they do just massive amounts of damage.
Yep.
Once you exceed their range, the damage starts dropping pretty significantly. But
yep.
Yeah, bows are not to be underestimated. They just don't have the rate of fire that other weapons do.
Yeah. The other thing I kind of watched the first couple of episodes of. And this is most of what I watched is on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, go check out a bunch of stuff because Netflix has a lot of weird stuff on it. And some of it's good, some of it, meh. But there was an anime called Expelled from Paradise. The premise was some of humanity now lives in space and in satellites, living in virtual worlds. And the Earth has kind of been turned into this wasteland that people do inhabit, but there's not a lot of them. So what the whole premise is hackers from Earth are interrupting the utopia that is in space. And basically the government of these satellites sends down some agents to go and find those hackers. Basically, a body is grown for the basically bodiless people, and their consciousness isn't put into the body, and they're shoved down into Earth. So they have high technology up in space, and of course, it's a wasteland on Earth. So the first couple of episodes were all right. Kind of poppy anime for me. Because I prefer the more grittier anime. But it's an interesting concept and definitely a bit of a cyberpunk theme around it, right? In which your near future satellites and, you know, people have basically had Soul Killer done to them and now they live in the virtual world of paradise. Meanwhile, you know, you have the scrubs in the wasteland eking out survival there.
I've been meaning to watch that. That sounds pretty cool. I've been watching an anime called Kengan Ashura. I'm probably not saying that right, but it's not obviously cyberpunk, but it does take place in a dystopian future where corporations settle all their disputes with like MMA style fights. I'm only about 4 or 5 episodes in, but I've been enjoying it so far.
Yeah, definitely send me the name and I'll go check that out as well. And then the last thing that I kind of watched in the past 2 weeks, and granted, I do work and I do other things besides watch TV, was the release of the live action of Cowboy Bebop, which mixed reviews.
I don't care what anybody says. I've been Cowboy Bebop has ranked in my top 5 anime since it debuted over 2 decades ago. I fucking love the live action. I truly do. Is it 100%? Like, are they trying to do the word for word remake? No. They try to remake the episodes, the individual episodes themselves, but they add their own twist to it, which is going to bug people. I get that that's going to bug people. And with live action, not everything can translate from an anime into live action and it not be a little bit goofy. But the show itself was always a little bit goofy.
Before you continue, I just want to say one thing. Welcome, Citizen X. We have a guest in our voice channel.
Joe!
Who has joined us.
Howdy.
Hey, you pal. That's 2 of my players all year at once. Yeah.
So, you can continue. Just wanted to say hi and welcome. And if you want to give any comments, Joe, by all means.
Yeah, just jump in wherever. But as I was saying about the live-action Cowboy Bebop, it uses the same soundtrack, and in fact, Yoko Kanno and Tank make cameo appearances, so it's nice to see them on screen. But it hits all the same beats that the anime did. It uses the music in the same manner, which is incredibly important. Because I'll say it outright, Cowboy Bebop has the most, it's got the best score of anything I've ever seen, period. Yoko Kanno is brilliant. She's the composer who also gave us the soundtrack to things like Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, and Macross Plus. Those are 2 of her highlights. The characters, John Cho is a great Spike Spiegel. He gets the character. He understands the attitude. I don't remember the name of the character who plays the live action Jet, but he looks the part, and he is channeling Bo Billingsley's voice from the anime.
Mustafa.
That's the guy.
I forget his last name. It's like Kashi Katri, something like that.
He's a perfect Jet. And here's where people are gonna like look at me like I'm crazy. The casting of Faye, because she wasn't wearing the outfit from the anime, like the other two, like obviously they wear the outfits. The Jet and Spike's outfits are very faithful. Faye's is not, mostly because it would look ridiculous to have this chick running around in hot pants everywhere. The actress who plays Faye, however, I think the portrayal of Faye on the live action is superior to that of the anime. I think she's a more well-rounded character on the live action. I think she comes across as more human, whereas in the anime, Faye's just kind of this nasty bitch that they just kind of hang out with. Every now and then she takes advantage of them. Basically, she's there to provide a foil to the others, and without really providing much in the way of benefit. Whereas in the live action, she's got benefit. She's a character.
Some people might disagree because Rotten Tomato gives it a 43% rating.
Yeah,
whereas the anime was 100%. But yeah, I definitely agree. The one thing that kind of scares me was the last episode and the introduction of Radical Ed. To me, there's certain it's anime characters
hard one to
that are great in anime. Not sure how well they can
translate over. Like I said, it's that'll be a hard one. Like the kid that they got to show up at the end and portraying Radical Ed. I mean, she understood the character. I think she might need to tone it back a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah, she needs to take acting lessons from, how was it, Margaret? Margaret. Forgot her name. Say that again.
Who are you trying to?
Shit, I've even forgot her name. Harlequin.
Margot Robbie?
Yes.
Robbie?
Yes.
Like a little bit less of Margot Robbie, to be honest.
But that kind of like little bit of craziness.
I love her portrayal of Harley. She does a great job. She does as good a live action as you could possibly expect. But I don't see much of. I don't know.
But that kind of weirdness, how to translate a very insane kind of goofy character into a live action, right? And I think that actress can be definitely get some pointers from, at least.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is they're going to have to get like a child actress who can be goofy without being obnoxious. And that's a hard thing for a kid to pull off.
Yep.
Any kid. I mean, in the anime, it was done by an adult, so.
Yeah, that's true.
I haven't commented much
because I haven't seen Cowboy Bebop, the new live-action series. No,
I strongly recommend it.
Been on the fence because I keep getting mixed reviews like you're talking about, but
as with anything else, look at the reviewer. Listen to the people that that you know and whose opinions you trust.
Okay. If you're definitely on the fence, mainly because of, for example, Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the Major in Ghost in the Shell.
My opinion on that's unpopular as well.
I still ended up enjoying that film. It wasn't as true to the anime or whatever. They kind of mixed plot lines and stuff, but it still was. I mean, it was a gorgeous film, and it was fun to watch.
Visually, it was gorgeous. I did not appreciate Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the Major. I think she
didn't have a problem with it at all.
That's you.
Here's why I didn't have a problem with it. I am very much against cultural appropriation. I am. The Major. She's a cyborg body that. Right. You know, in the manga, she switches that body out on a regular basis. But regardless, it's a cyborg body. It's not supposed to be her Japanese body. It's not supposed to be anything that you can tie down to any one corporation or any one company. It would be hard to find. Oh, well, it wouldn't be hard. There's all sorts of Japanese actresses who would excel in the role. Should the part have gone to them? Maybe. But Masamune Shiro and Mamoru Oshii both came out in favor of the movie. And when the creators say give it the thumbs up, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I just didn't like Scarlett Johansson's portrayal. And I'm not saying that I don't like Scarlett Johansson as an actress. I thought she was killer in Hail Caesar. Her portrayal of that character was awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It could be that syndrome that I think the live-action Cowboy Bebop has, is you have a very strong diehard fans of an anime that are many, you know, at least 10 to 20 years of those people loving those characters in that one thing, and then coming along and 20 years later putting a new look to them. And yeah, you know, it's one of those things.
The thing is people look at the anime, the original animated film, as if it was the original, and it's not. It itself was based on a manga, and I don't know. As I said earlier, Oshii is bloody boring. He's got the finest animation studio on the planet behind him, and he uses it to make movies with like 2 hour runtimes, of which you'll get 5 minutes, maybe usually less, of action, and then the rest of the runtime mostly consists of people standing around very still talking in monotone voices. I prefer the standalone complex series to the motion picture. I prefer the manga to everything, and I enjoyed the live action. Like it was enjoyable to me. Did Scarlett Johansson's portrayal knock everything out of the park? No, but it wasn't horrible. It wasn't unwatchable. And like any other cyberpunk movie, I'm mostly watching it for what's going on in the background anyway.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I loved the themes. I loved, you know, the details, like the holographs throughout the whole city.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely love all of the atmosphere.
Look, the Gaisha robot itself,
yeah,
was
all of that
amazing.
Was spot on. But yeah, that, I mean, to me, my only criticism is just how the major was played. She seemed very dry and you know, sure, major in the anime, major in, well, major in the manga was even more different than than either version.
The only time you don't see a dry major is in the original source material, where she gets as goofy as everybody else.
Yep.
But that's Masamune Shiro,
right,
for you.
So
even in standalone complex, she's pretty dry and fairly monotone, which I get it. I mean, that's the way they choose to portray the character. That's okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's still this, I don't know. Again, you know, I read the manga. I watched the original movie. There still seems at least some, I don't know, connection I had with her versus Scarlett's version.
Sure, I can get that.
Yeah. It is what it is.
So far, the only Ghost in the Shell that I really just have not enjoyed at all was the Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex 2045. That.
The recent one?
Yeah, and it's not because of the animation. Like, them switching to CGI, that's just the way they do things nowadays.
Mm.
What bugged me was that god-awful Mary Sue character that is like their assistant to. Every moment she was on screen, I just wanted to replicate Joker's disappearing pencil trick on myself.
You mean the comic relief that they introduced? Because the
comic relief who was wasn't good enough. A talented hacker and a fighter at somehow at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, is she just fucking awful. Awful, awful character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's kind of like, it, at least in the genres, there's a couple of things I do want to check out on Netflix that seemed cyberpunkish. One is called Anon, starring Clive Owen, which kind of looked like, so the trailer I did see, he's a cop and he's telling, I guess, his superiors what was happening. And basically he's describing how this woman he's following basically hijacked his visions and made him see things that weren't really there. It seems kind of like a hacking kind of Jesus Christ, not the Happy Man. God, my brain is not working tonight. Standalone Complex from Ghost in the Shell, right? With not the Smiling Man. Jesus Christ.
The Laughing Man?
Laughing Man. Yes. In which she can hack your visuals. Another one on Netflix was called Tau, which was basically the premise is a girl is kidnapped because a inventor of AI is trying to make his AI better. So he kidnaps this woman, and Gary Oldman is in it, so can't go wrong with Gary Oldman. So those are two things I want to go check out around, at least that have kind of a cyberpunk feel. And give me some inspiration.
Whether the movie is good or awful, Gary Oldman's performance is always going to be worth watching.
Yes.
Have either of you seen Ad Vitam? It's a French sci-fi series.
No.
I have not. Tell me
it's
more.
It's got a very kind of cyberpunk, noir kind of detective feel.
I watched iEdit.
iEdit?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm familiar with that one.
Which it's a French, I think it's French, anime.
This isn't an anime, it's just a live action one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a really good feel. At first it doesn't, it's more of like the cultural aspect of it that seems more sci-fi than the world, but then you kind of get a gist of basically rich older people have found a way to extend their genome and basically live forever. So you have people that are like celebrating their 200th something birthday, and you've got a cop that's investigating into these strange murders. There are members of kind of like basically the young have become sort of like a impoverished underclass. They don't feel like they have any future because the wealth is hoarded by the elderly. Sort of like a suicide cult that happens where like young people just get together and basically they hold a pistol to the person in front of them, and then they do this in a big circle, have like a suicide pact type of thing, just because the world is so shitty. It's really a interesting detective story kind of thing. There's some
new reality show coming to a station near you.
Yeah, it's got kind of a cyberpunk feel, though. I really dug it.
What's that called again?
Ad Vitam.
Ah, that sounds pretty good. I will have to check that out.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's what you're here for, pal.
Yeah, so since you're here, because I know we did invite you, I guess we can kind of introduce you to our audience, and if you want, you can give us a little bit of background on who you are and why we invited you in the first place.
Okay, those who are familiar with the old Views from the Edge forum for Cyberpunk probably seen me post there back in the day. I'm Citizen X, also currently run Ouroboros Games on Drive-Thru RPG. I've written some stuff for both Data Fortress 2020 back in the day as well.
Very true.
And then also, I've worked on some various horror game stuff for things like Trail of Cthulhu through Proto Dimensions magazine and Dark Times magazine.
I mean, from the Data Fortress angle, you were a heavy contributor for Interlock Unlimited and one of the heaviest contributors for the South American Conflict Sourcebook.
Yeah.
In addition to other stuff, but those are the two big projects that you threw down on.
That is true.
So, yeah, and he's a co-player of mine in Wisdom's current campaign of Nomad Nation.
It's very true.
It's a lot of fun.
So,
highly enjoyable.
Yeah, so I don't know if you heard our ramblings in the beginning, Citizen. Basically, we were just kind of going over a few things that are a little bit of rambling for ourselves, because this is kind of going to be our year-end episode. And just got off to, you know, what's been happening since the last episode that we did. But since it is kind of a year-end, the two kind of things that have reached at least being a year old is Cyberpunk Red and Cyberpunk 2077. And what does the future hold for both of those? So,
it will be interesting.
Yes, so I've kind of been following some vloggers around Cyberpunk 2077. They've been kind of monitoring CDPR's what little information that CDPR is publishing from news point of view, because they did just have their year-end shareholders meeting and town hall. So apparently there's not going to be any more updates to Cyberpunk 2077 this year. But next year, the thing that's going to come out within Q1, i.e. meaning January, February, or March, is their next-gen upgrade, which is going to be 1.5. So they're skipping 1.4, apparently, and heading straight into 1.5. Also, and again, this is all hearsay, which one blogger says, oh, it's going to be exciting to know that this is happening, versus another vlogger who's like, this is all hearsay, and do not take it for a grain of salt. And if you believe this shit, you know, I got, you know, tons of bridges in New York to sell you. But basically that there is going to be at least two DLCs coming out next year for Cyberpunk 2077. Whether that happens or not, well, we'll see.
I mean, honestly, as I've long said, the only thing I want for Cyberpunk 2077 is for there to be some kind of cooperative online component that I can run around and play with my friends like I can in the tabletop game.
Yeah. That is being worked on, and highly doubt it's going to happen next year. So, but in other Cyberpunk 2077 news, the anime is going to be coming out soon. I don't know exactly the exact dates, but I know it's probably within the next few months, at least from a timetable that I've seen. So we're going to be getting whatever anime from the various minds who've created it onto Netflix. And again, I don't know how many episodes it's going to be, Whether it's going to be
they've been pretty hush hush about the development of that. I don't know. Like, we don't even know the basic plot premise yet. We just know that there's a anime coming out based on the property. Here's the thing. I look at all of this from the mindset of a dude still stuck in 1990, just discovering cyberpunk, and it's like the idea that now we're getting an anime based off of this, in addition to the video game, all the fucking, like, Dark Horse has put out, like, just a tremendous amount of comics at this, well, not a tremendous amount, but they put out a fair amount. There's been, like, three or four different, there's been, like, three miniseries and a couple of graphic novels, plus there's been, like, a Polish-produced graphic novel. It blows my mind to think that all of this stuff is based off the Cyberpunk 2020 property.
Yep.
Even if that's not how it's advertised, it is. Like, you know, all the stuff is there. I get giddy just thinking about it.
It is pretty wild.
It's, before the game came out, I was like, I'm gonna get every piece of promotional material. I'm going to have everything that can possibly be connected to this game that exists. I have given up on that dream because there is so bloody much of it. And it's like, it's really expensive too. Like, if you go to the CDPR website, who can afford any of that crap? And I say this as someone who's tried to. I bought more than I should have.
Furious George, I don't know what Molasses Flood is working on. There's rumor around possible doing Cyberpunk, possibly doing Witcher. Supposedly,
what's a Molasses Flood?
It's a game studio.
Oh, okay.
And there's also been talk about the CDPR kind of doing a third IP, which they haven't talked about exactly what that IP is and what it will be. I it's all hearsay. So I don't know. And I think the other thing, because Molasses Flood was kind of a very recent procurement, it's going to take them probably a year before they decide what they're going to do with that company. Just because I work in the corporate world and I know how slow companies can be. Especially once you start getting big. Because I know CDPR has grown to be 1,200 employees now, which is a moderate, pretty big, not as big as like EA or some of the other big name game companies.
Yeah, they're not Rockstar or anything.
Yeah, but they're also not small anymore, right?
No.
So
certainly bigger than Volition ever was.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year, and I definitely think that, or I believe, there is going to be more Cyberpunk stuff, even though they got beat up over it, and, you know, they had various lawsuits around the stock price tanking, and promises were made to the shareholders, which they really weren't made. Promises were never really made about how much you were going to make, because that's always a gamble, and that's the thing with stock markets. It's always a gamble.
Yeah.
A product might not go well. But I think, you know, the game is definitely in a better place. I'm actually starting to get into installing some of the mods for PC, and I know, Derek, you can't do that, but one of the mods that I just installed Basically did a major overhaul. It like fixed a lot of the perks, so a lot of the perks don't work. It has more, you don't escalate your health as much. Damage doesn't escalate as much for your leveling. You actually have to use gear and drink, and they actually, he actually changed the whole food and drink system. So it gives you not just benefits to health, but it also will give you benefits to how you aim, or your evasion and your dodge. So you actually care about going to a vendor and picking up some juice, which is an interesting mechanic. Yeah, he also scaled the levels of NPCs, so the scaling of the combatants was kind of off kilter, right? So towards the end game, you probably had, I mean, most of my characters got up to like 700, 800 health, whereas the NPCs were at like 10,000. And what that meant was, if you shot like a propane tank, it would, sometimes it'll barely affect an NPC, where it would definitely slaughter you, right, with the explosion. So he kind of scaled it, and again, he reduced the armor, so like head slots no longer can take armor slots. There's specific modifiers that you cannot have in certain areas, right? So the slots for your pants and your feet, you only can have like move enhancements there. I think only jackets are allowed to improve your armor. Heads, I think, allowed you to possibly do more crits. I don't remember the exact details, but he kind of separated all that out. It's a very interesting mod, and he did a lot of stuff in it. And you can always tweak the mod, right? So you can say, all right, you know what, this is still too easy for me. Modify the scale of NPC health. Yeah, also you fix some of the AI stuff within the game. So right now I'm doing another playthrough with that mod. And I'll give you some feedback on how it went.
Yeah, let us know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other thing is Red, right? Year old. I think Red has been successful overall. There's definitely a larger influx of new users and new players to the system.
I mean, it what they're doing seems to have worked. They've reinvigorated interest in the Cyberpunk franchise all across the board. New products are coming out. Chrome has yet to hit, but we've got the data pack, we've got the net running deck. Artel Storian on their site gives out, like, once a month they give free downloadable content.
They're definitely paying attention.
Titans with Sirenscape, Roll 20 just got official Cyberpunk Red character sheets. It seems to be doing well. I'm so glad to see that.
Yeah. The one thing I'm kind of annoyed with is the silence from Monster Fight Club and Combat Zone. So they did the Kickstarter, and I am still waiting for my miniatures.
I mean,
I haven't heard too much from them.
Stuff takes a while, and Kickstarters are notoriously slow for you to get, for you to spend the money to the time you get the product in your hand. Like, I understand that.
That is true.
But yeah,
some companies are better than others. So, like, I did another Kickstarter for BattleTech. There was a monthly update of, hey, here's what these models are going to look like. Hey, you know, this was back when at the beginning of the pandemic was when they were supposed to start delivering, right? Or yeah. start the whole thing. So they would give a monthly update of like, these factories are offline right now. We're looking for another factory. Thank you for your patience, blah, blah, blah. Next month. Hey, we worked out some a new contract. We're moving forward. You know, we'll talk to you in a month. We just got the prototypes. We definitely need some retooling, and we're working with the company to get that done, right? Whereas Monster Fight Club is, I got a few things.
I mean, to be honest, I just got an email update from them the other day.
Oh, like, really?
On the 28th. Where they say that they've completed all the writing for the rule book and the missions and the campaign. They're working on getting the final graphics treatments and getting the layout complete. And they're printing out miniatures. I get updates from them. I think maybe there might be something wrong with
The last one I got was in October. Things.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the email now, the 28th.
Huh.
I don't remember what the last one before that was, but I would assume it would be October.
I'll have to take a look. Yeah, the last one I got was October 15th. Interesting.
Well,
maybe
I would check my spam folder.
I would check my spam folder too. Yeah, so that's another thing that I was definitely looking forward to and get my hands on, is that game. So,
are they still planning on releasing? Is it called Black Chrome for CP Red?
Yes.
It's in the plans. That's the first like major supplement that they're talking about putting out. We're all waiting for it with bated breath. To see if maybe that like reintroduces like gear porn to Cyberpunk Red.
That's what I crave.
I played in a game with Mike back in 2014, and he was talking about Black Chrome back then. He talked about one cybernetic that he wasn't going to include, which basically was, and maybe I shouldn't say because he might have divulged it as a thing, but it was a very interesting cybernetic. Not sure how it would work in game wise, but we'll see. But
you should be super vague about this whole thing.
I don't want to get myself in trouble. Just in case,
man.
Mike's listening. You never know. It's He's not so much Mike things. As Lisa. I think
they've got better things to do than listen to us.
True. Well, so anyways, he talked about a cyberware that was going to be included. I also, a couple years later, I gamed with one of the authors who is part of Black Chrome. He kind of talked about how he was doing some of the art. And they were working on it. and then I talked to that same author after Cyberpunk Red hit, and he's like, I have to rewrite everything because the rules have changed. So I think Cyberpunk Red, the changes within Cyberpunk Red kind of changed a lot. So I think originally Black Chrome was basing it off of Cyberpunk 2020 and that type of economy, etc. So now that there's a new economy, it's a new way weapons work and all this other stuff, there's probably had to be done a rewrite. And again, I don't know if they're going through playtesting or what, right? So it's been a year since they've rewritten a lot of the Black Chrome, but we'll see what happens. The alternative is to get someone from our Talsorian Honor podcast and we can grill them.
I mean, way back in the early days of development of 2077, Mike joined the CD Projekt Red forums for Cyberpunk,
yep,
and announced back then that he was going to be, I want to say this was like 2015?
Yep.
But he announced back then that he was working on a new Chromebook, and it was actually supposed to come out before the video game. So, I mean, we're all waiting with bated breath.
Again, no offense to Mike, but...
No, not at all.
He does can take his time if those of you who dealt with our Telsarians, they do take their time, but usually that time they do put out some good stuff.
I don't tend to complain about how long any type of creative project takes to come out. I just hope that my only commentary on, you know, something coming out is, you know, let it take whatever time it needs to get done and get done right.
Yep.
I think that was the problem with the game is that they rush, or the video game is that they rushed it. Even as late as they were still rushing to try and get it completed.
And again, this is all my opinion, my hearsay. My thinking is the reason why they kind of rushed it was because it was 2020, right?
Yeah.
They announced the game in 2013, and they wanted to hit those really iconic marks of getting
it in 2020. Yeah, I mean, they put it out at the absolute last minute of 2020, and it feels like that was a corporate decision. I mean, granted, we were all kind of expecting that anyway, that's when it would get released, because, hey, 2020, it's based on Cyberpunk 2020. But, yeah, if I were them, I'd have let it go. And I think the reason that the delay... with the video game, I think the reason that everything got pushed back is, I mean, I've said this before, and don't get me wrong, I love Keanu Reeves, but I think them bringing him on board to play Johnny Silverhand, I think when they did that,
yep,
they decided, hey, we need to get as much bang for the massive amount of money we spent to get Keanu. We need to get as much out of him as possible. So we're going to rewrite the whole game at the last minute. And you developers need to make that work.
Yeah. And then the other factor, especially when you're looking at timetables, is licensing. So keep in mind that when a company licenses a property to a game developer, there's always a clause in there that will say, if you don't do anything within the next X amount of years, you're forfeiting it, and it's coming back into my thing that I can then try to get someone else to do, right?
Yeah.
Or pay a penalty.
That's why in the 80s and 90s, you know, Richard Corbin, who had the rights to... Or not Richard Corbin. I don't know where I got that name from. It's why movies, the Marvel movies like Captain America and Fantastic Four got Corman releases, which were never really meant to see the light of day, but were made just so they could hold on to the property rights.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Basic argument.
And again, there's also could have been a contract with Keanu, right? And, hey, you get to use my character, but you have to just... push it out in X amount of time, or else you forfeit that. So that's another constraint I think a lot of people don't see. And of course, corporations are never going to admit to their fan base that, yeah, we have to use this or we're going to lose it. And then there's always that pressure of, well, as a corporation, we don't care about paying the penalty, however your shareholders are going to be like, Hell no, you're not going to pay that penalty. Get it fucking done, because I want to make as much money as possible.
I think that was the other big part of what went wrong with the game, is the shareholders were all like, we don't care what kind of art you're trying to make. We want our money. We gave you this money to build this game. Now put it out so we can get our money back.
Yep.
And again, it all became this rushed a bit of madness that, I mean, this isn't the first time I've said it. It won't be the last. Cyberpunk 2077 does not live. It did not live up to the promises that were made of what the game was going to be.
Yep.
But that's okay, because it's still better than 90% of the games out there. It's still a fantastic game. Is it buggy? Yes. Is it as buggy as any Bethesda game ever released, ever? Not really. Like, I've seen Bethesda games that were much buggier than this.
Yeah. And to me, it's also a love letter to Mike and all he did. And kind of bringing up him into the mainstream. Before we continue, Wolf7896, there are a lot of Discord servers out there for RPG groups. The ones I can give you right now off the top of my head is there, depending, again, it all depends on which system you want to run, whether it's Red or 2020. There's Night City Stories is one server that of Discord that has a lot of games going on. There is, I want to say Cyberpunk Zero, but yeah, Cyberpunk Zero is another server. There is
the Artel group. I mean, Altarsorian, Discord server.
Neon Red, and Red War, Red Winter, are four Discords that I know are dedicated towards running games. So go check them out. I'll type them in the chat as well.
The Cyberpunk 2077 official server, it has areas set aside for the role playing and the tabletop games, both Red and 2020. I don't know. I don't do a lot of Discord. Joe, you know anything?
I mean, Night City Stories is my Discord. That's what I run.
Yeah, Cyberpunk, that's why we
run a hybrid of Red and Air. A friend and player and former co-GM goes by Swiss on Discord. He also runs Machete Punk 2020, I believe is what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Machete Punk, that sounds interesting.
Yep. I'm sure there are others. The CP Red 2020, that's the other ones that I'm...
Oh, that reminds me. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but apparently in 2022, there is going to be Machete in Space, the movie.
Oh, that makes my brain hurt. I love Danny Trejo, I do, but oh, God, that makes my brain hurt.
Yeah, I'm not sure we need that particular movie, but it's got Danny Trejo in it.
I'll watch it. I will power through it. Probably with the hefty amount of booze to facilitate the process.
Yep. Yeah, so what else do we need to talk about for wrapping up the year?
Can I tell you my favorite mission in Cyberpunk 2077?
Yeah, sure.
By all means.
All right. Yeah. Well, you are our guest. So what are your thoughts on Cyberpunk 2077?
Well, I mean, it was certainly buggy when it came out. I will say that I wanted an option like Deus Ex had, where you had a realism mode, where headshots are always kills, even as a player.
Amen.
You know, that would have been nice. But still, the story is amazing in it. Some of my favorite missions are the Cary Uradine missions. And there's one where you get to smash up a record exec's yacht and then burn it and sink it. and that is my absolute most favorite punk rock mission of any game that I've played.
Really?
In memory. Yeah.
I mean, I love the shit out of that mission, but yeah, no, I, looking back, I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's got that, like, one-of-a-kind guitar. There's only five in the world, and I think Saburo Arisaka owns two of them or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
And he's playing this song that, you know, never played before for you as you're just cruising around in this yacht, and then he's like, all right, let's trash this thing. And then you burn it and have to swim to shore. I thought that was fantastic.
It was one of the quieter moments in the game, but it was it was played to great effect.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an action heavy or combat heavy mission at all.
No, I don't kill anybody doing that mission.
Yeah,
but it was just entirely story based, and it was just great. I really dug that.
Well, his animosity towards us cracks was pretty interesting. You know, you have the hardcore rocker going against the pop groups, and
I love us cracks so much.
That was like, a great scene or a great.
I would
too.
Buy an album of yeah. Those crazy weird eyed chicks. The mission you do later on, if you successfully complete that, the us cracks carry Uridine thing, it opens up the mission where you go and like are the bodyguard for one of the girls later. I wanted to see much more of that. I wanted to see them become like an actual contact that you like protect at concerts and whatnot.
That'll be the next DLC, hopefully.
I mean, that's really indicative of a lot of the PC or a lot of the NPCs you come across in Cyberpunk. Is I really wanted more of all of them.
Yeah, I'd love to see more DLC for all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every like from the people you deal with on a regular basis to like little brief nothings of people that you meet and have a short conversation with. I wanted more of all of it. I wanted to. I could have spent hours talking and hanging out with most of those NPCs. I can't remember any of them that actually annoyed me, which is pretty strange, because most video games, the NPCs start to annoy you really quickly.
I'm trying to think which non-adversary NPC. I mean, like, I definitely would not start up a friendship with Fingers.
No, but even then, he was like, I wouldn't start up a friendship, I wouldn't hang out with him, but he was an interesting and unique enough character.
He definitely was.
That, I mean, I enjoyed my interaction with him. I mean, I hated the dude, but I enjoyed the interaction.
Yeah.
The corporate chick who sells you out.
Meredith? No, not Meredith.
Yeah.
She didn't sell you out. Well, kind of.
She sells you out. She sells you out. I wouldn't have minded like some other options for how that situation resolved.
Or her hiring you to do some more missions for her.
Yeah. I'll tell you what the all-female gang that Judy hangs out with.
The Moxes.
I wanted to hang out with them a lot more. Like, I wanted them to be a much bigger part of the gang. Like,
yeah, they're pretty awesome.
I feel like they got really underrepresented.
Yeah, because all they do is hang out at Lizzie's. That's it.
That's the only time you ever see him.
No, there's that one garage that one of them goes cyber psycho.
I want to learn more about the preacher guy too from the Valentinos, because there's a couple missions where he sends you to basically kill some of his own gang members.
And yeah,
his rivals.
Kind of like. Yeah, but they're rivals in his gang.
Yeah.
It's not like they're...
Well, is it his gang? He just hangs out with the Valentinos. It doesn't mean it's his gang.
I mean,
he's the head fixer. It's his gang.
Yeah. Like Wakako and her boys.
He kind of runs things.
I mean, it just stands to my point that, you know, these are great NPCs. And if they were, if it was actually a tabletop role playing game, like I'd have glommed onto all of them and been all like, well, you're getting added to my list of contacts. I'm going to come hang out with you some more. Then the GM's going to have to give me a funny voice for each of them.
And remember that funny voice every time he,
does it. You got to keep that consistent, because that's part of why I like the character.
I'd love to see them do something that's like an open world multiplayer, though, kind of like in the vein of the GTA 5 RP servers.
Amen.
Where you even if just it's... play a hot dog vendor on the streets of Night City or something, just whatever you want to do in that world would be really cool.
Supposedly it is coming. Again, don't expect it anytime soon. I know that they are working on it, or at least there is rumblings that they are working on it.
Is this more bot bullshit that I don't get to play with? Bastards.
Yeah, well, eventually.
What I want to see is I want to see the 2077 crew. I want to see an actual 2077 source book where they give us workable battle maps from the game.
Yes, me too.
Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the interiors of the buildings, like, in top-down map view. I want to see the cool locations out in the world. I've got the that website that I can go to and make screen caps of high definition shots of the map, but I want more than that.
I think the issue is that, and again, this is my opinion. I think Altar Surian is trying to determine when to push that out. Right, because they still want Red to be a success.
Yeah, its own unique thing. You know, and I get that. And apparently there's some weird... I don't know any of the details. I just know what I've been able to observe. But it seems to me that there's some weird line drawn with the rights to Cyberpunk and, like, who owns what. And again, I don't know any of the details, but it seems like Red at this point is pushing for a different agenda through Artal, and it's weird.
Well, again, this is a hypothesis. It could be that Artal Sorian is experimenting with Red to figure out what rules they need to change, improve, merge with old editions to come up with the best edition, right? And that would be 2077, right? So maybe they want to take some of the voices of the community on homebrewing, etc., and eventually create 2077 to include that, kind of like, you know, the 6th edition of Cyberpunk.
Yeah. I mean, time will tell, or it won't. Some questions never get answered.
Yep.
All we can do is lay back and hope to reap the rewards of what does get pushed out, and continue pushing out stuff on our own.
Right. So, Citizen, let's get back to you a little bit and just to introduce you to the community at large so they have a little more background on you. So when did you originally first get into Cyberpunk?
I got into Cyberpunk, I'm thinking, maybe my junior year of high school. For a while, it was just something that had been rumored that about how cool it was. At the time, I was already into RPGs. I'd been into RPGs since I was maybe 11 years old. Found some AD&D books in my neighbor's garbage. Started from there.
Was that during the Satanic Panic?
Yeah, there was just a box of, AD&D books. And I didn't know how to play or anything, but I just started improvising with friends in the backyard. We literally carved dice out of wood and wrote numbers on them.
That's hardcore.
So yeah, we started real, real old school. And I started, kind of creating worlds and stuff. And one of the things I eventually did was create kind of a sort of a world based on like some of my favorite films, which was like RoboCop and things like that. So I was already into that kind of sci-fi, cyberpunk stuff, but I didn't realize there was a game out there for it. Like other people had talked about Shadowrun, which didn't really interest me, but then I got to play some cyberpunk for the first time and I was sold. I was like, this is it. It's what I've been looking for.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, it set off all the bells. So I was probably maybe 17 or so when I started playing it. Then eventually I started running it. The first game I played in, I remember I was a nudist cop. I just rolled randomly for all my backstory and affectations and everything. And
you're playing a dude who likes wearing, who likes running around naked in a game. Like I cannot believe you would do such a thing.
I was only, I'd wear the uniform, but I went commando underneath. That was,
oh yeah,
I'd have the uniform on if I was on duty.
Otherwise, as opposed to in my game where you're going to wear the full-fledged bondage gear, just run around.
Well, you got to, it's a nomad, it's just proper attire.
Well, you could always do, subdermal armor with a magnetic badge. That's all you really need.
If you can get away with it. Just for perspective, I've known you, I want to say since like 2005. And that was when I joined the VFTE anyway.
Yeah, I think that's
you from the Edge forums. Yeah.
I learned about VFTE, I think, from your website, so that's probably what brought me over there in the first place.
Back with the web rings?
Yep.
Oh, Jesus, the web rings. We're going back now. Oh, Lord.
For you youngsters, web pages used to have rings. And what a ring was basically someone decided to put on their site a chain of links to other sites that were associated with things. So if you were part of that ring, basically you would have this little navigator at the bottom of your page that would say, hey, go to the next page, and it would take you to another site associated with that was in the ring. And there was, cyberpunk crawl rings. Yeah.
was a member of at least two of them.
Yep. So you could actually go through and click on these rings and find different sites associated with it.
They all died even before GeoCities did.
I think, Google became, or the search engines became a lot better getting you the information you wanted. Of course, now the reverse has happened, right? You can't find any of those nice, wonderful little hidden gems of sites that are out there in Google because, if you're not paying for it or you don't know anything about SEO, you're shit out of luck.
Well, not to mention, there just aren't that many of those sites left.
Yeah.
Yours and mine are really the only two, the French site, and they're the last, we're the last of the big ones.
Yeah.
I know my site, I think it was around the same time as you were having, traffic issues with Data Fortress.
Yeah,
I know something happened where my traffic level on my site got throttled to such a degree that basically they went from a free forum to trying to charge me a monthly fee that was outrageous to to even I often
wonder if that's not all connected, like when Mike sent the CDPR guys to my site, if they didn't use the links, my hyperlinks page, and just hit everybody's cyberpunk sites like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've, as far as I know, I've got the most exhaustive and complete list of links for Cyberpunk 2020 sites to exist.
Well, your site also has crap load of fluff. And the images and other stuff where, you know, my site kind of had a little bit, some rules, you know, back in 2012, 2013, that's when I really started going back to my site and being like, okay, what sites are out there? What do they have to offer? What, how can I be different? And, I know, Paper Dragon. His name,
Paul Romaine.
Yeah, his stuff. He had actually some JavaScript utilities out there, and I was like, you know what? Let me start dabbling into that, and because I started learning programming around that time.
Yeah, for the longest time, he was the best. Was the best repository for the
little utilities and shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah, utilities and scripts and any kind of good little programs. I think at this point you have surpassed him.
Did my best.
quite admirably. Your utilities are fantastic.
Yeah. I still think it's funny if you go to Google and type in my name, Cyber Smiley, the first real result besides my site is a place called Cyber Smile, which is cyberbullying. It's a foundation to stop anti-cyberbullying sites. I'm surprised they haven't like contacted me and said, "Hey, we want your domain name."
Sell it to them if they offer to buy it. You sell it. You make that money, pal.
Yeah, I don't think so, because I am a cyberbully.
Oh, that's true. Like, can I join your site? I got some kids to make fun of.
Yeah, cool.
Junior lunch money.
I'm starting a foundation called Take Your Lunch Money or Take Your Milk Money. So yeah,
that's good stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely been, at least for me, getting back into the scene is. It's kind of been a good thing. Granted, it's only been the past 3 years that I actually started getting to play Cyberpunk again. Whether running it or playing it. So, I think if CD Projekt Red didn't come out with that trailer, my site would probably be kind of a dead side note in history.
2013 teaser trailer, man. It set a lot of things in motion. Sadly, I haven't been able to, like, right after that is when I started having all my health problems. And even then, I was still able to work on stuff up until I lost the game room, which is also when I lost like a comfortable, dedicated spot where I could sit and write.
Yep.
It amazes me that I cannot, for the life of me, create a space like that now.
Someday, man.
The only furniture other than our beds we've got in this apartment is one couch. Which just is not conducive to, it's hard to type from a couch with any level of comfort, especially if you've got severe back problems. Cause like I said, man, the ideas for new content, they're overflowing in my head. I just can't seem to put them on the screen. I'm working on it though.
Well,
it's a struggle. I deal with writer's block a lot myself, so.
I think we all do. Especially if you have a day-to-day job that sucks a lot of your attention out.
Oh, well, it's yeah. funny. When I was working front desk at a hotel, I think that's when I got more cyberpunk stuff written than ever, because I'd go to work and do it, and I'd basically get, it was my way of getting paid to put out the stuff for cyberpunk.
I actually used to run cyberpunk when I worked at the front desk of a hotel. I'd run it all.
You know, I ran you. There was a time when I ran you on a game of cyberpunk when I was working at the front desk of a hotel, that brief cop game I ran.
Yeah, that was great. I definitely enjoyed that cop game back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I like running cop and detective games.
There's definitely a ton of resource you can use for those.
Absolutely. Like, that's one of the reasons I like running them, is because there's just, like, you can't swing a dead cat without coming across something you can use in that for inspiration or just direct ripoff in that.
Mm-hmm. So, Citizen, do you prefer to be a player, or do you like running games?
I basically go crazy if I go too long without running something. I normally run games. I don't mind being a player. I enjoy it, but I also find the games that I enjoy playing most are somewhat lacking. There aren't a lot of GMs that actively run the stuff that I enjoy. I'm more into investigative horror games and stuff like cyberpunk. So sometimes it can be hard to just find somebody that runs it.
Right. So you like Call of Cthulhu as the alternative?
I'm a big fan of Delta Green, actually, which is a lot like Cthulhu, modern day Cthulhu.
It's the curse of gaming, that you run the games you want to play in the most. So right. You don't ever actually get to play in the games that you dream about.
That is the struggle.
Yeah, for many years, the gaming group I had, or the people I gamed with, most of them, if the game didn't have elves in it, they did not want to play it. So it's like, I don't want to run Shadowrun. I don't like getting peanut butter in my chocolate, goddammit, and I'm not going to get my elves and my cyberpunk.
Amen to you, brother.
So. but yeah. My wife yelled out, "What do you mean? You don't like peanut butter in your chocolate? It's awesome." It's like, you don't know
the
context.
I mean, in that one singular example, yes. Peanut butter and chocolate are two great tastes that go great together. But I do not want my peas to encroach upon my potatoes.
I always felt with Shadowrun, too, there wasn't really a good backstory or whatever to why those supernatural elements are now back in the world. It was always left kind of mysterious. I mean, I thought what is that movie with Will Smith, Bright?
Yes.
I thought that did a better job of portraying a Shadowrun world than the RPG ever did, and like making it more believable.
You were just talking about that earlier.
Yeah, we were.
Before the podcast. Furious George asks us what we think of Vampire the Masquerade. I played it briefly in the 90s. I liked the system. I liked the Tim Bradstreet art quite a bit.
Yeah, Bradstreet was an amazing artist.
Actually, I used to get really into doing the online 24-hour vampire chats. I did that for a long time at a place called Tarnished Reflections. And it's actually what inspired me to run a 24-hour cyberpunk chat game for a while. I did that for
You ran that for a long time
on Unlimited Cyberpunk.
Played a few times in Vampire, mostly Malkavian. I enjoyed it.
I liked Malkavians.
That scene was interesting.
I think can be some strange people in that scene.
Yeah. And it was the fans of the game that made me never play it again. I liked the system. I thought the setting was cool and the lore was cool. I definitely dug the characters that I created for it quite a bit. And I would have continued playing it, but I made the mistake of a friend of mine invited me to a vampire LARP, and then we're talking back in like 93. And I showed up to it, and this I don't mean to shame anybody. I'm not making fun of anybody because of their appearance. But there's a level of hygiene that, you know, you have to maintain if you want me to be comfortable being in any sort of close proximity to you. And this girl took it upon herself to decide that she was going to try and seduce my character. And she did that by getting real close to me and trying to bite me, which I don't kink shame. I'm pretty open-minded, but this woman smelled atrocious. She smelled like she'd been in a fursuit all day and hanging out in a dumpster behind an Indian restaurant. And on top of that, the word that can best be described for her mouth was snaggletoothed. every single last one of her teeth that were visible went different directions. I've never seen anything like it, but she was not going to bite me. That much was
I think I might have met her at a gaming con 1 year.
It's entirely possible. It killed me for the whole hobby because everybody else got mad at me, even though it was my first time there, that I didn't let this chick bite me. Like the whole coven, or I forget what they called it, but the whole group, it was not a pleasant evening. So yes. Yeah, it killed the whole game for me.
Yes.
Just like Star Trek fans kill Star Trek for me.
And I think back in the 80s and 90s when it came to gaming, there wasn't always a policy around hygiene with game conventions and gathering. So you definitely had this funk that some people didn't realize that they had for whatever reason. And
nobody wanted. I think with this girl, like, nobody ever wanted to say anything because getting a girl in the 90s, yeah. in the bullshit in the 90s in Kansas City, the atmosphere was very misogynistic. So if you had a woman or a girl or any kind of,
it was hard to get women into gaming at the time. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it was. So if you had one that was problematic, you just let it slide.
And I think Vampire was kind of the game that really brought in a lot of female players into the game scene.
Absolutely true. It's like, it was the 90s. So, like, Vampire brought the girls into the gaming community the same way that, like, Sandman brought girls into the comic book community. That's not to say that they weren't there already, but it's when they started, you know,
a wider audience
and accepted enough,
yep,
that they would, you know, brave the community, as it were, because the community back then, It had its problems. It was a great place to be if you were part of it, but getting to be part of it could have been, it was its own set of problems.
Well, I think some of that,
some gatekeeping and stuff too, yeah.
And I think some of that gatekeeping came out of, you know, a bit of the satanic panic, right? So, and also, you know, cool kids. Oh, wait, you play Dungeons and Dragons? Nerd. And basically beat the hell out of you.
Really came from is that, you know, it was such a insular and insulated group that had, like, being a gamer or being a comic book fan, being a geek of any kind, like, back in the 80s and 90s, that was, you were seriously an outcast. Like, yeah. The cool kids did not do that. Or at least if they did, they didn't talk about it.
Yep.
And gaming was sanctuary from that. Game stores were sanctuary. While all the other kids were hanging out and watching football games, and you did your thing.
Blood in, blood out.
Yep.
And because, you know, girls typically tended to prefer the cool kids to the sweaty, smelly nerds, it took a while for women to integrate into the community.
Yep.
We had to overcome a lot for that to be, I mean, it's something we still struggle with. Like,
yep.
There's still a lot of gatekeeping. There is, if anybody's ever been to a convention, there's still an issue with hygiene. Things are getting better. Mm-hmm. Things are getting better.
Well, I think now cons are like, give you a posting as you sign up is, if you stink,
oh, yeah,
we are going to tell you stink, and either you can go wash yourself or you need to leave the con.
It's a beautiful thing that stank ass is no longer tolerated in our public spaces.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to cons in the 90s. There wasn't a lot of female players when it came to D&D. There was a couple, but if you wanted to hang out with female players, Call of Cthulhu was the game to be. I remember I used to go to one con here in my state. There was always a GM female, ran every slot. So she gave the other female players a comfort zone and kind of bolstered that relationship. So,
I mean, looking back, it's actually kind of weird because the very first gaming group I had, like, it was an equal mix of girls and guys, girls and boys, and like the next gaming group I had, it had girls in it too, and
yep.
So I didn't realize at the time the obstacles that, you know, girls had to overcome in just going into a gaming store and or going to a convention.
Yeah.
My head was up my ass that, you know, I'd go into a gaming store and see all the posters of, like, half naked women all over the place and, like, the hentai corner and not think anything about it, as opposed to, you know, now I'm very conscious of, you know, that kind of environment and what it actually says.
Yep. Like when my wife could go to the conventions, and, you know, we wouldn't always be in the same game because she played a lot more Call of Cthulhu. I would play war games or Dungeons and Dragons or try to run Cyberpunk. But yeah, every game she would go to, there would be at least one guy who was like, do you want to marry me? Because they never met who's a gamer. And they were like, oh, you need me, you know, I need you in my life, you know. And she's like, no, I'm already engaged or at that time we were probably married by then. But yeah, and again, we never saw the horror stories that happen. I'm not saying that they, you know, I don't believe that they ever happened, but I know that they did. It's one of those things that I think we were in a safer environment than some, and that's a shame that it did happen.
Your own experiences are always going to color your perception of things, and if you didn't see it, I didn't see it. I didn't see it until much later, and now looking back on it, it seems pretty obvious when it was happening.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was completely oblivious. I was just happy to be accepted myself somewhere.
And of course, I think, I don't know, my wife was a little more thick skin because she was an AC/DC fan, so she would go to AC/DC with, maybe by herself, maybe with a possible friend. So those rock concerts were a little more wild back in the day, especially when it came to females. And she's like, yeah, I felt safer at gaming conventions than I do at some of the rock concerts I've been to. So
yeah, I can believe that.
But it's definitely has grown and gotten better, which great. I'm glad, you know, we are making progress a little at a time, but we are making progress
slowly but surely.
Someday we're, you know, humanity's going to achieve being a better species.
Well, I mean, it's the difference between our ideals, and the ideals in the geek community have always been high. We've always striven to be better people,
thanks to Star Trek.
Grumble, grumble. The reality, of course, never always has a hard time living up to the ideals.
Yeah.
But we try, and things are getting better. And that's a good thing.
Yep.
That's a good thing.
So we're almost out of time. Before we end, I want all our listeners who are on right now, tomorrow, Cyber Nation Uncensored is doing a kickoff. They are going to have magnetic miniatures, specialized cyberpunk dice, and a dice roller. So definitely
a big dice tower.
Go check that out.
I meant to bring that up earlier. It looks really good, people. Like, you need to check it out. The box that the dice are coming in, like, it's seriously cool. I'm probably going to throw some money down on that myself, so I would recommend you do the same.
Yes, and
The dice tower is cool as well.
Yeah. So definitely go out and support Rob. He's definitely one of the pillars of the community, trying to promote and advance cyberpunk. He gives us this platform, which we appreciate, because you go to here, which is his Twitch channel, as well as YouTube. So,
we exist for the grace of Rob. Thank you, exactly. Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Anything else you guys want to end off with, or shall we call it? So the next episode should be taking place in 2 weeks. However, it's not, because we're going to take our little hiatus. Whether or not we come back on the 5th or the 19th, or sorry, the 5th or the 19th, yes. I think you and me, Wisdom, need to figure out how long of a vacation we want.
You know what? I'm saying let's go ahead and get a full month's vacation. Okay. Recharge some batteries.
Yep.
That'll give us time to like actually get the future format set up and figure out what we're like, make this a little
more structured.
Make this place a little bit more structured, a little be all that we can be.
Yep. All right. So if that's the case, we are going to return on January 19th, Wednesday, the third Wednesday of January. So all of you, we hope you have a good holidays, whatever that holiday might be, and we will see you next year in 2022 when the hot war starts up.
Joe, thank you so very much for joining us tonight. We'd love to have you come back and join us again in the future.
Yeah.
Thank you for the invite.
All right, guys. To all our fans, talk to you guys later. Enjoy your night. Bye.